I just want to give a quick introduction. You know, this was a guy that, Greg, that I had met probably about 9 months ago when we started working on this thing, putting this thing together down here in Casa Grande. And, you know, Greg was such a great help. Greg was a great help in putting this thing on. He was very instrumental. He was very helpful. He provided us with a place to meet. He was involved. He helped get the treatment centers in the area get involved as well. And you know, just an outstanding representation of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, it's been such a pleasure to work with you, Greg, on this. And I really appreciate everything that you've done for us and the committee and the conference and the community putting this thing on. It's been a great blessing. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and turn the meeting over to Greg. Let's give him a round.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Greg. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Greg. We love you, Greg. Lots and lots and lots. And hope.
They asked me to come over here and speak, and I'm like, I don't know what to say. And they said, well, just do what you do. And I said, okay. And, I was in prayer meditation this morning before I left my house, you know, and I woke up and I hit my knees and I got with God and I asked him to allow me to be a vessel of maximum service, and I started planning out my day. The transformation of my life, as a spiritual awakening of a spectacular upheaval, okay, is that about 2.5 years ago, I did not do that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, I woke up in the mornings, and I won it, and I manipulated, and I stole, and I cheated. And I did not understand, nor even did I put two thoughts together as of why. And through the journey of this brokenness, okay, of this will that was broken, I had became this slave into this disease. And the truth of it is that it had a lot to do with fears. It had a lot to do with not understanding what life was meant. And today, I have a higher power. My higher power is a Him, and I call Him God. And if you have a problem with that, it will give you a chance to grow. Okay? So the beauty of this, right, is that they asked me to come up here and do this thing here. And, through this journey, man, I just didn't know. And I had these fears, man. And I couldn't put my finger on it, right? And I'm working with these sponsees now, and things just a lot more clearer for me, right? Like, I understand, like, these fears a little bit more. Like what gave it to right to run my life? Right? What is its singleness of purpose? This fear, what does it do? It stunts my spiritual growth. And it affects everything from the inside on the out. And I just couldn't do it no more. And I woke up this one morning, man, and I was done. And I was so broken, man, and this despair. Like Bill Wilson, you know, he puts it down, man. This moral self-pity, quicksand stretched. And I didn't know that I was living in my bottom, right? And I get a little passionate, I get a little excited, so I'm also bipolar, so watch out. So the thing of it is that, you know, I just had enough. And I was starting to accept change, but here's the truth, right? This brought more fear because I don't know what change looks like. And I'm scared. And I'm full of fear and I'm frightened. And, I had a restraining order on me and stuff because sometimes that does that, you know, and alcohol gets, you know, gets that privilege of doing things like this. And I was at my sister's house, and, you know, she was fortunate enough to put up with me, right? And I had a knock, and it was my probation officer. And he came to the door. And, you know, I've been under the radar for a long time, I think, right? And he comes knocking, and I was just so broken, and he just caught me like, I don't know what to do. And, you know, I'm signing the green sheet, man, and he's about to walk away, and something inside of me said, just put your hand out. And that's what I did. And I said, Richard, I said, I think I have a problem with alcohol and drugs. And he says, well, I figure that much, you know. And I, So, you know, he got me through some treatment. He got me through some AA and stuff. And even while I was in AA, man, the truth of it is like, I went untreated for about 6 or 7 months. And, you know, I was that cat, right? Like, you know, the wind stopped blowing, Ma, you know, any grand and, you know, all that fun stuff. And the truth of it is, man, is that I didn't pick up the pieces. And I was willing to go to any lengths. I was willing to go to any lengths. And I went to a meeting and I sat there and I heard some good stuff, about being suggestive. And I'm like, you know, the truth of it is that nobody really approached me and says, hey, let's work some steps. Like, they told me to go and get a sponsor. I'm like, I don't need a pimp, right? Like, I don't need that. You know what I mean? And you know, about 6 or 7 months dry, and you know, this one cat comes around and he says, so let me get this straight. You know what I mean? Like, you know, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't know. And he says, well, you're coming with me, stupid. And I said, okay. And we went through this book work, man. And you know, here's the beauty of it, right? Like, I was willing to go to any lengths for my alcohol problem, right? My ego reasserted itself. And so once God was able to lift the obsession, right? What about all my other areas of my life? Where was I selfish and dishonest in those areas, right? Because that's what my ego does, is that it rebuilds and it reasserts itself. And what I found out was that the longest distance between two points in a man is from his mind to his heart. And that's a long journey, man, let me tell you. And it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. You know, we've had all kinds of great things going on this weekend. We had the Straight Pepper Diet. We had Nothing But a G thing. We had, you know, the young people, you know, like all this beautiful stuff. You know, this is the powerful cement that binds us right here. How awesome is that? So I'm working these steps, man, and I'm getting right. And you know, I think I'm doing something, and I turn into this Nazi, and I become like this big book thumper. And you know, the beauty of all that stuff, right, is that I get to step on necks, right? And they love it. And how cool is that?
Yeah.
Let me call you on your shit, you know what I mean? Let me call you on your shit while my sponsor calls me on mine, you know what I mean? And you know, today, you know, it's for me, my higher power is just real personal to me. Right? God is just so personal to me. It's like I'm a baby, man, and he just holds me close to his bosoms, man, in his arms. And he wraps me with his love, man. He does. This is what he does. And like a child, man, he provides like a good father that he is. I'm his agent. I'm to be of maximum service. And I am okay with that. The beauty of working these steps is that we get to take a look at ourselves with the spiritual advisor to walk you through this, right? Because I'm talking about my experience. Like, I didn't know how to live. I didn't know what it was like to go to work and to participate in work instead of the being there for a paycheck. Like, there's a big difference, you know? And I'm talking about the outer part of the material world, of course, you know? But what about the things that we have deep affection for like family, friends, right? This higher power is just, I'm right where I need to be today. I'm right where I need to be today. And so I started understanding the doctor's opinion a little bit, and I started understanding that I cannot differentiate the true from the false. And this is where spiritual advisors really come in play. And I started elaborating and evaluating, man, like where I was at with my spiritual advisor as I'm building a connection with my higher power. And the beauty of that is that today I am comfortable in my own skin. And it's available for all you guys. There ain't nobody here, man, that wouldn't want to be honored to take you through the work. Like, I'm in it for when the lights get turned on, right? Like, you know, I go over a fifth step and stuff, and then, like, all of a sudden they have a different feeling to now look on the reality of life with their perception. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That's the beauty of it. And then you're like, well, okay, now what do I do? And we're like, well, okay, well, hey, man, it's a, what are you willing to do on this list as we went over this fifth, and we smash out to it, man. And we get on this ninth step, and it's like, what I really love about the ninth step for me as a spectacular upheaval, because it proves facts. Here's the fact. The problem centers in my mind, right? So it doesn't matter what I think the outcome may be on this amends. It's not what I expected at all. See, that shows proof. that's the beauty of what this 100 people, they sat down and they said, this is it. And I want what they have. And I have to be willing to go to any lengths to get this. And like, this is like, what, about 80 years old? Something like that? I'm not a mathematician, man. I'm just going to guesstimate, right? But like, and it's still going on. I mean, we're people who normally would not mix. And here we sit. And we're survivors of this disease. I had survivor's guilt about a couple of months back. And my sponsor's like, I don't know why I'm emotionally cutting. He's like, well, you're a survivor. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I get to be so open-minded and so teachable today. And the beauty of it is that today, I am free from want. I am free from fear. And I am free to live. My willpower that was once non-existent has reasserted itself in strength and courage to seek the spiritual truth, to have that wisdom. And I don't hesitate to go anywhere. I might get a little anxiety and be like, I don't want to be an opening speaker. And this is where the mustard seed is at. And in my life today, like, I was able to get my family back. I have a good job. I mean, I love it, right? I've got plans. I've got goals. Like, I didn't even know what a goal was. And this is all the outer scope, right? But the truth of the spiritual awakening and the spiritual experience is the peace from within myself that the world cannot give me. That's where God comes in my life. And this is how I get to contribute. And the traditions are awesome, right? Like I don't have to kill you. You know what I mean? Like, it's just good stuff. You know? And I've learned something today, you know? I've learned that out of all my anxiety, I have courage to come up here and stand up here, because I'm a pretty shy person. And I know they laugh, right? But I am. Like, I'm a really shy person. And once you get me going and stuff, I'm like, what? I was talking to Derek, man. Derek, I was like, I get to talk about spectacular upheavals and transformation and psychic change. And he's like, yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. You know? You know what I mean? Like, I have today to contribute as much, because I've been taken away for so much. Right? Like, 25 years of alcoholism and just total chaos, right? Like, and I'm not saying like you have to have 25 years, you know what I mean? Like, if you have 2 days, man, great. If you got 2 years, like, but my disease carried me. Like, it was a long bottle, you know? And it's like, today I just get to give. I get to be a father today. Like, I don't even know what that looked like 3.5 years ago. I always thought I was a cool-ass dad, you know what I mean? And I was a no-show dad, and I was a deadbeat dad. And today it's not like that. Today I get to provide for my family. I get to help my kids, man, with riding bikes or doing homework, creating memories. Creating memories. And they are so dear to me. And you guys are so dear to me. You guys saved my life. You guys taught me how to live. I didn't like just walk up in here and be like, okay, I got it. I mean, that's not how this works. So I just really love you guys. Thank you for allowing me to be here. And I'm going to give it back to your chair. I think I'm good.
Thank you, Greg, very much for sharing that with us. You know, it's always a powerful message when you're able to elegantly convey your spiritual experience in words, you know, because what I've experienced is words can't describe. But you did a great job. Thank you. And so this next speaker that we have is a woman that I've known for about 3 years? Three years now, I think. We're going around three years. And you know, she was very instrumental in a period of my sobriety that I didn't know how I was going to get through. And I didn't know where the answer was, and I didn't know what to do because I thought I had all the answers, and the answers that I had weren't working. And she turned me back to this book and this fellowship and the solution that's in this book. And she really opened my eyes to some things at a period of time that was extremely dark, period of my sobriety. And I love her to death, she's been very, very helpful in getting this meeting we started off the ground on Wednesday nights. If any of you guys are in Tempe, come check us out. We're at the book study meeting on Wednesday. It's called Depth and Weight. She's very involved in service and carrying this message, being a channel of God's vision here on earth. Without further ado, I give you Georgia.
You ready? I'm Georgia. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Georgia. We love you, Georgia. Lots and lots and lots.
And more Jesus.
What? You do that at my home group, I'll kill you. You know, before I start talking about me, my favorite subject, there's some people I really want to thank. I want to thank Brad and Derek for encouraging me, because I tried to talk them out of asking me here. And as of August 1, which is a thing we'll talk about, I really tried to talk them out of asking me here. And I really appreciate their encouragement, because I have had a great time. Last night would be one of those milestones in my sobriety. I don't know about you people. You probably took it for granted. I mean, I saw more skin last night. Well, never. And I really want to... Oh, you people. You piss me off so bad. You don't do anything I tell you to do. And I got you wheeling me around and opening doors. And you know, I've got this buddy from Seattle, Bill, who came down just for the conference. And I want you to know where the asshole sat. Way back there. Because he knew if he got up here, I put this microphone in front of him, so he had to get thumped at too. Stand up, Bill. Come on, stand up. Stand up.
Woo. All right, Bill.
Tell us your name and your disease.
My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
All right, Bill. We love you, Bill.
Lots and lots and lots.
And
now he's going to take that back to Washington State, and he's going to bitch about it. Ah, my sobriety date is May 8th, 1975. It impresses me. I came to the fellowship originally on January the 25th, 1973. I only missed one meeting in the course of the days that would follow after that. My sponsor is KP. My home group is Sunday Night Big Book Step Study in Tempe. And I love being here. I told someone earlier this morning that if I found out I wasn't alcoholic, I'd lie about it. I'm not above lying. Am I, Emily? Where did Emily go?
No.
She refused to lie for me. She did that. She stood right up and said, I am not lying for you. Well, who would she lie for if not for me? And she didn't lie for me, and I had to tell the truth. I'm not going to spend much time drunk, because it was not a lot in my drunkenness that I remember. I spent a lot of time. Once I became a daily drunk, about 7 years before I found sobriety, in a blackout. I was a severe blackout drinker. And I don't mean hours here. I mean sometimes weeks. You know, that I could function in a blackout to the degree that I did function is pretty amazing to me. Because there were a number of people that knew that I was out of control. But there were even more that did not. When I was 10 days sober in 1973, my boss realized that I'd worked more than 3 years, and he'd seen me drive for the first time in 3 years, and he fired me. I'm a perfectly good bookkeeper drunk, but he didn't want to put up with me sober. Fired my ass. That was a day. That was a day. We'll talk about it. I didn't start out a daily drunk. I started out a binger. You know, I could keep it to the weekends. I was a single mother with two little boys, so I could keep it under wraps. Pretty good. You know, I'd have one of these wild, you know, how did I get here and who is this idiot next to me events now and then. But I was reasonably functional for a while. You know, my youngest, I got married for the second time when I was 23, going on 24. So when I was 25, my third son was born. And that was the last sober breath I drew. I mean, I had been a non-smoker. Well, that's a lie. Pretending to be a non-smoker. Non-drinking. Mother-to-be for about 9 months. And I guarantee you the first drink I had after that kid was born was the end of it all. Now I had become a daily drunk. And I became a sloppy, mean, bad-mouthed loner who only went into bars to start trouble and to pick fights and to find my next victim. You know, I was really such a great drunk that when I picked a guy up, he didn't know whether he was going to get laid before or after he got out of the hospital. I mean, I just had this vengeance toward men. You know, women didn't exist. They were only competition, best to be ignored. But men, they had the power, and I intended to get it. I don't know how I intended to do that, but I made a great run at it, I want you to know. Ladies, you can't have the men's power. Let's settle that one once and for all. Men, you can't have the ladies' power. Let's get that squared away. You know, it's just the way it is. We got to stand on our own 2 feet. We got to, you know, hang on to one another and find God, because it was not working the way I was doing it. I've been before Judge Allen in the Tempe City Courts more than once. The first time was for public exposure. Don't get carried away. I was just taking a piss in the alley. But it went downhill from there. Finally, on January the 24th, I end up in jail with blood all over me, and ain't none of it mine. This was not good news. Now, I had done physical damage to more than one human being, especially my 3 sons, in the course of my 7-year run, but I had never seen that much blood at one time before, except the last time I killed a steer. I mean, jeez, a lot of blood. Come to find out, you know, everything, my whole life was secondhand. I didn't know nothing except what you told me about what I did. I didn't know who I was till you told me who I was. I didn't know what I said. I couldn't contradict you because I didn't know. So the jailer tells me they haven't pressed charges yet because it might be murder. What degree, he wasn't a judge or a lawyer, so he didn't know. That's good news. I mean, you're not even started to hang over yet. You know, you just need a drink. You're just to that place where you just need the edge off a little bit. You just need a drink. And you're standing in a cell, and some asshole with a pipe cut is telling you that you might be charged with murder. Well, what's might about it? You either killed somebody or you didn't. You know, and he wouldn't give me a cigarette either. Asshole. You know, I've come to know that man through the years, and he was really a really nice grandpa kind of guy. He really was. But I didn't think that at the time. Come to find out, I get indicted for assault with a deadly weapon, 4 counts. A football player from ASU and 3 cops. You know, I took them all down. Fortunately, the football player didn't die. He'll walk around with a metal plate in the back of his head the rest of his life, but thank God he lived. And I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was given 24 hours to choose between 3 to 5 years in the state penitentiary or 2 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a fair exchange. 3 years, 5 years in prison, 2 years seemed good to me. There were only 2 meetings a week in the city of Tempe in those days, and I got sentenced to both of them. And after, I don't remember now, 3-4 weeks, went to the judge and complained about the quality of manhood in those meetings. Well, you should have seen them. They were old. I was 32. There wasn't a one of those guys that wasn't over 50. They were old farts. And most of them were married anyway. Married men are just a little bit harder to seduce than unmarried men. But I didn't need that edge anymore. I needed easy. So I complained to the judge. So he told me he fixed that for me. And he sentenced me to a third meeting over in Phoenix at the Creighton Presbyterian, Ruth W., beginner's meeting, steps 1, 2, and 3, every Wednesday till I thought I was going to have to kill somebody. God, I hated that woman. Now, she was to become my grand sponsor some years down the road, but I would have never thought that would be. I promised myself as soon as I got off probation, she was the first lethal process that's going down in my life. I really did hate that woman. But I didn't feel so much fond of the rest of you. I really was in a dark, dark place. I did not want what you have. I didn't want to grow up and be a goody two-shoes. I did not want to spend the rest of my life running around seeing who I could be of give me a break service to. I'm here to save my ass, take care of your own. Unless it's nice to feel, and maybe I'll help you then. I did not like you. You know, and your talk about God, I'm an atheist. You know, and your talk about God was insulting. Insulting. I'm an intelligent, grown human being. I don't need the Santa Claus version. It's shoved down my throat. God thing. I did not want what you had. That's why I said in these meetings, God, they're so boring. I mean, I heard the same war story out of that same old oats that I thought I could say it for him better than he did. I just thought it was just disgusting. And it wasn't funny anyway. He thought he was so cute. He was not. He was boring and old. And I wanted to have, you know, I was going to say I wanted to have a good time, but that's not true. I didn't want to have a good time. I was a married woman, divorced by her husband when she was 10 days dry, with 3 little boys he took custody of, because I'm a felon, not him. I'm living alone in a little apartment. I'm working a cheesy little job because now I can't get bonded, and I'm a bookkeeper, and an unbonded bookkeeper is pretty useless. You know, so I get this cheap little fill-in job, trying to make $1 reach the other dollar. I can't drink. I'm alone. I'm pissed off royal. I don't like anybody or anything. I would cry if I could. I would admit I was terrified if I had known it, because I did not know I was terrified. I thought that I was just being treated absolutely unruly by the world around me, and that I deserved better. I had this absolute attitude of superiority. I was so superior to you people. The fact that you were happy about being sober and I wasn't just fed my inferiority complex that lied under all that superiority lying and cheating. And I was not a happy camper. In fact, you know, I look back on that last 2.5 years and I marvel. I absolutely marvel at the power of God that he kept me from drinking long enough for me to get enough brain cells back in my head to begin to be able to think once I had enough. Now, it was going to take another drunk for me to get enough. It takes what it takes. You know, and I sometimes can look at you when you're a newcomer coming in the door and pretty well know you haven't had enough. Now, that doesn't remove me of the responsibility to give you everything I got. Because I've been wrong more than once. Well, not many times more than once, but I have been wrong. I will give you all I got. But I can call it sometimes that I know you, sweetheart, need another drink. And we go watch that. I keep an eye on you, though. Because when you go take that drink and you come back in here, I'm going to be ready for your ass. And you're going to sit down there next to me. And you're going to explain, you poor little sorry ass, how you got drunk. Now, I know you're alcoholic. Now, I know you lost your power of choice over alcohol. But you're supposed to take your own inventory. I ain't supposed to be doing it for you. You're supposed to be doing it. Now, I'm going to damn help you take your inventory. And we're going to talk about the 30 days, the 3 months before your last drink. And we're going to find out where your weak spots are. I'm going to knock the shit out of you. Period. And you think I'm kidding? Don't think I'm kidding. I mean it. You slip, don't come around me. I was informed by Brian, that little snot, come in there and inform me the other day that I go whacking on newcomer men. That I just go up and whack them. Well, hell. Sometimes it gets their attention. Besides, it beats what I'd like to do. Because we don't need to die of this damn disease. We do not need to die of this disease long before we take the next drink. You know, let's get it settled. I'm sober 36 and a half years, and I'm one sniff of the cork away from my next drunk. It's that damn simple. Now, it's easier for me to stay sober today than it is for some of you. If you don't pick up some good tools and some real habits and some real, genuine fear over the course of 36 years, it's going to be a lot of wasted time in this room. But I ain't got much slack. You know, I've watched me in these last few months meet the old lady that lives in the cellar of my mind, the one with the long legs and the tight ass and the red hair. She's grown fangs. That bitch is pissed. And she's found new ways to get out. You know, I actually sit down with two of the ladies that I only sponsored two ladies today, and the people around me, and said, "You got to do my inventory for me this next week. You know, this is my no chemo week. You got to do my inventory for me. You got to tell me when I'm stepping out of bounds, because that bitch is ruthless, and she would just, wouldn't it just please her little heart to run out here and attack me and we end up drunk. And you know what? That can happen. And if we don't pay attention, it will. But one day at a time, it's not gonna. We are gonna see to that. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of we. It is not me. And I'm almost ashamed to tell you how long I was here before I realized that it was we, not me. Too long. You know, in the course of working with others, my primary source of being of service is one-to-one sponsoring. You know, I've done the GSR and the intergroup and, you know, in the area. You know, I've done all of that wonderful, powerful, powerful service work. But where my heart lies is one alcoholic looking in the eyeball of another alcoholic. That's the corner of my life. That's the corner of my sobriety. And I found out recently that I really cannot stay spiritually sound without it. I have to have that. It is my medicine. I have to have that on a regular basis. That I have to sponsor other people. That I have to give away over, and I have to hear me say, "My name is Georgia, I'm an alcoholic," often. Often. And then to hear me say my sobriety date almost as often. You know, and in the stepchild meeting of my home group that Derek was speaking of, Depth and Weight, on Wednesday night, we identify ourselves and our disease and our sobriety as the meeting starts, so we don't have to keep introducing ourselves. And the way you people do that, that's a good deal. You know, and you know, when I say that sobriety date, I say that sobriety date down to my toes. I have every ambition, every goal in my life is to see that be the only sobriety date I'll ever have, and to get out of this deal alive, sober, one day at a time. You know, in the course of my early recovery, I got involved with this old-timer that I absolutely hated, because I hated everybody. So, you know, I gave no No, it's like anybody. I hated you all just the same. You know, a man by the name of John. And he decided that he wanted the Monday and Friday night meeting in Tempe to start a Wednesday night meeting, at which they said, no, the church needs the property. And no, we're not willing to go looking for another location. No, no, if you want a meeting, start it yourself. And he says, okay, who's with me? We'll start a Wednesday night. Wednesday night. I don't have to go over to Ruth W's thing at Creighton Elementary. I can get the judge to change that one. We'll go with John over to Mount Carmel. And we started this meeting called the Tempe Bloopers. Now, I want you to know, this is in the first 2.5 years that I'm here, and I'm not impressed by the fact that I'm involved in the starting of a new meeting that was really going to become a legend in its area. I wasn't impressed by any of that at all. It was all about me. I'm not going to have to drive over to Phoenix to Creighton Elementary anymore. And John had a nice ass. And I intended to touch it. He always was such a selfish son, bitch. I never got a hold of that one. He died before I could get it. Years later. But he became the God in my life. He told me what to do and where to go, and I told him to kiss off. You know, among other things. You know, but I stuck in there because I'm sentenced. Now I've been around long enough to start supplementing my misery in Alcoholics Anonymous with a little marijuana on the side. Nothing heavy. A kilo a month. I am not kidding. Don't go to AA meetings high on marijuana. They're fine as hell. Grant you that. But they last 6 hours. You know, I don't know what happened. I had picked my 10-year-old boy up by the shirt collar and the crotch and thrown him in the dumpster because he was a piece of shit that needed to be thrown away. Isn't that good news from your mother? You're a piece of shit that needs to be thrown away. And as he went into the dumpster, he caught his arm on something sharp and cut it to the bone. So my middle boy comes in having dipped his hand in his brother's blood and comes in and spats it on my white t-shirt. And says, you get the award, now you can take your kid to the hospital. Isn't that great? Nice story. So I go take my kid. I'm cussing him out all the way. It's his fault that he's bleeding all over my car. And I take him to emergency. And I don't really know what happened. I don't remember thinking much between that moment and the next day or the day after that. I can't remember. It was a Tuesday when I drank, so it probably was the next day because it was a weekday when I took the kid to emergency, so it probably was the day before. I just walked through the door at the Howard Johnson's bar on Apache Trail in Tempe and started drinking. Now, I'm not a beer drinker. I didn't see any point in playing middleman. But I knew that this drunk was going to be a short one, so, and I wanted to last just as long as it could, so I started with beer. Now, about 4 or 5, maybe 6, who counts? I always counted. But I always lied when I counted. I mean, I lied through my teeth, to myself. You just had 3 beers. No, that was, no, I'm having my 3rd coming up. No, you had 3. No, no, this is number 3 coming up. Right. Who cares? I always counted. But I become aware that I'm trying to figure out whether the rim or the base of this beer glass is going to do the most damage to the fellow's face I'm talking to. And I hear it. Been around here too damn long. I hear it. I get up, I go to the John, it's wall-to-wall mirrors. I see this tall, buck-toothed, red-headed, freckled-faced girl standing there in that mirror with big pieces missing out of her, like somebody's been taking bites. And she says, somebody needs to help me. Can't you see I'm dying here? Somebody needs to help me. And that's all I remember. I come to the next morning, and through the course of the years, I was to find out that I made my usual scene of hostility and endangerment, you know, risking other people's lives with bad mouth and bad language, the usual thing. The angry lady, oh, angry my ass, scared to death. You know, I looked out the window to see if my car was there and was surprised to see it, and realized the most important 90 seconds of my life that I had nothing to say over whether I would or wouldn't drink alcohol. That I was going to do exactly what I was doing the rest of my life. I was going to sit in these meetings pissed off until I got so pissed off I drank. And then I would get terrified and sick because I couldn't drink anymore. And I'd come running back into these meetings and I'd sit here pissed off, taking it out on anybody. And it, you know, the checker at the grocery store wasn't safe. I would attack anybody or anything that got in front of me. I had this mouth that just knew no limit. You know, and a fist or a club that could back it up. Somebody should have just killed me. Some big dude should have just stood up and said, "Enough!" and smashed me to the ground. That was a rude awakening for me. I did not know I had nothing to say about whether I did or didn't drink. Now I want to tell you, it's been a lot of days since then. 13,333. That many days since that moment. Right now I can stand here and look you in the eye and tell you, I have nothing to say. I have nothing to say about whether I do or don't drink today. It's that simple. Now I have a lot to say about whom I will serve today. Well, not a lot. I got some to say about what I, you know, because I don't get to say, I will not serve my disease. I don't get that say. As soon as I say that, I'm serving my disease. I get to say, how can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done, God. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. It must become my continuous thought. I may use my willpower along this line all I wish. It is the proper, singular article, the proper use of my will. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. I can't tell you how many times in a day I say that. And when the day comes that I can say it every second that I am awake, I will have said it continuously, I get to go home. I'm out of here. Now, the truth is, the first step that came to me in that 90 seconds on the morning of May 8th, 1975, has come to me in other forms a number of times. So let's make the first step a real thing. It is not a one-time step. You know, 3 years later, my kid sister was to commit suicide. You think that's not a first step item? Stand and look in the mirror and see out what you're going to do over a tragedy like that in your life. You're going to do a first step pretty fast, or you're going to get in trouble. Because that is a life-altering event. You know, get married again. That's a first step. You have just done a life-altering event. You better know a good first step. You know, when I come to that second step, I better be prepared to know who and what this God that I'm going to ask his care and protection with complete abandon is. Or my instinct of survival will not allow me to allow him to restore me to sanity. It's just that simple. Pink clouds that fold off into the eons just won't do it. I gotta have a God. Now, for the first 2.5 years of this sobriety, I can tell you, I had a mighty powerful God. I did. The only God I had was the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you did a damn good job. You did. You pissed me off often. You took my inventory anytime you damn pleased. But you gave me the grace to stay sober long enough to find a real God. And I don't mean that you're a fake God. I mean that you're a temporary God, like a temporary sponsor. That's it, you're a temporary God. And I had to have a temporary God because I came here an atheist. You know, one of the things I like about me is I'm loyal. And the wronger I am, the more loyal I am. And I was real loyal to being an atheist. But you broke me. And in 2.5 years, I came to a place in my life where I began to have a real life conversation with an entity that is greater than me, and that cares about my well-being in a way that I'm not even smart enough to figure out. In the course of my sobriety, you know, by the time I take a good and second step, there's no question about the third. You know, I've asked God's care and protection with complete abandon. So it doesn't take a lot of smarts to know. Now that God's coming in with care and protection, I got to reach out with my will and my life. I've got to know that what's coming in is going out. So I make a decision. You know, when I make a decision to come to this convention, yeah, that didn't get me here. But I had to decide I was going to do it before I could start getting ready to get here. You know, in the third step, I'm making the decision to, you know, just devote myself to the next 9 steps in order to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Now, this is my opinion. Everything you've heard since the minute I opened my mouth is my opinion. This particularly, I'm convinced we don't really have a completed third step until we sit across the table from some newcomer that has finally hit the bottom and bit down on the first step. When we see that light come on, I guarantee you we know what the third step decision was all about. Because as Greg was speaking earlier, there's no high better than that. There's nothing on the face of this earth that can get a hold of that wonder of watching a dead person come alive, resurrecting right out of the grave, right out of the filthy grave that is going to carry him on for years as the breathing dead. Oh, thank you, God. Then I know I have a third step. Then, when I have taken what you've given me and done my very best to hand feed it to another alcoholic, one day at a time. You know, come August 1st, I got this man standing in front of me, who I really had never seen before, telling me that I'm terminal, that I've got 4 to 5 months to live, and I need to put my affairs in order. You better have a first step then. You better know who God is. You better know how much power you got and how much power you ain't got. You damn better know the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps so you can recite it in your sleep. You better have a good support system around you that's going to hold you together until you can think again. But I got all that. I'm on chemo now, and they don't know. You know, it's in God's hands. They don't know. You know, one day I'm only going to live a year, and the next day I'm going to live 3. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to live this life being of maximum service to God and those about me one day at a time until God says, stop it, come home. And then I'm going to stop it. I'm going to come home. And then you people are in trouble then. You think I'm a pain in the ass now? I've already applied for my next job. And Depth and Weight better get some really hard britches on. Because I'm going to come in there and I'm going to kick some ass. You know, in the course of sobriety, the early years are the most fragile. That first year. That first 18 months. That first 2 years. But don't you people with 9 years and 11 years and 17 years think you've got much muscle? Because complacency is a deadly enemy. About the time I think I don't need to go to that conference, I don't need to serve on that committee, I don't need to do that mealy-mouth job like greeter at my home group, it's about the time I start becoming fragile. Nobody in this room. And this is not my opinion. This is the law. Nobody in this room is going to stay sober longer than one day at a time. And by the grace of God, but I got to get me in a place where I receive that grace. God can dump that grace by the bushelful on my front door every day. But out of my shame and my guilt and my dishonesty, if I don't open the door and accept the grace, I'm a dead fucker. It's that simple. Now, I know it's not good style for little old ladies to be swearing. But the fact remains that there are some things so brutal, they need to be said in a filthy language. This disease is filthy. And it intends not a single one of you should walk out of here sober. It doesn't want to kill you. It wants to live your life. And if you let it, it will. Oh, isn't that a loss? All the blessings that I will miss. All the blessings you will miss. You know, I watch these people come over and carry my trash out. Oh, you can't believe these people. I have around me amazing, amazing, loving people. They come wash my truck. They come vacuum. They come clean my carpet. Boy, did that carpet need a cleaning. I am such a slob. I mean, I keep a much better house today than I ever did since I got other people doing it. Juanita comes in and tells me that the green stuff growing in the refrigerator is unnatural. And I argue with her about the expiration date on it. Well, 3 years for Yorker's good, isn't it? Well, I proved to her 11 years is good for Tom and Tom. For Tom's. I mean, she ain't had indigestion. That 11-year outdated Tom's did the job. What's wrong with yogurt? And those are blessings. Every time this alcoholic is willing to set aside my preference for this moment to meet your need, there's a double blessing that goes down. One, I get blessed by God Almighty for having thought of somebody besides myself, a very unnatural thing. And two, the other person gets blessed for having received, been willing to allow me to give some help, some assistance, some guidance to them. It's a double blessing. And I watch these young people, predominantly youngsters, but certainly some people that can't really legitimately call themselves youngsters anymore, regardless of how they behave, come in and be of service to me. And I know that while they're washing my table, if you sit at my table and I catch you in a lie, you have to go wash the dishes. Liars wash dishes at my house. I make sure there's dirty dishes for people to wash. That's why I don't wash dishes. I save it for the liars. But a lot of people that don't lie do my dishes too, because I don't wash dishes. I've become a genuine slob. I mean, I have reached my goal in life. I am a kept woman. Don't get no better than that. Except you don't do my inventory for me very well. You know, you're too generous with me. Every day when I get up, I call God on His promise. He promised me on page 124 that I have the power to avert death and misery for others. So every morning, including this morning, the very first thing I do is remind God that He promised me I have the power to avert death and misery for others. And I go about doing that. Now, I'm pleased to find out that I don't actually... Well, I don't know that I'm pleased. But I have found out that I don't actually have to be of service to another 24 hours a day. You know, I do have to take a shower and, you know, and call my niece. And, you know, I do have some life that doesn't appear to be of service to others. But I do have to be willing to be of service to others 24/7. I gotta wanna be willing means I wanna. Willing does not mean, oh, well, if you hold a gun to my head, I probably will. That is not what willing means. Willing means I wanna. To dedicate oneself to a discipline. Voluntarily dedicate oneself to a discipline with good cheer. I like that term. I came onto that term late in sobriety, probably about 22, 23 years. I fell onto this term in the dictionary that was used for the writing of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Good cheer. Now, I don't know how that's different from happy or joyous or free, but it has a good sound to me. I want to do what I do with good cheer. I want to do what I do because I love you. When I say I love you, I'm saying that I am willing, I wanna lay my life down for you. And if I'm not willing to do that, if I'm not willing to set aside my little plans and designs for benefit of you, I don't love you. There's a simple criteria for love. Is your need this moment more important than mine? If it's not, I don't love you. If I can use that as a measure for love, I can grow into it. I can grow into being willing to let you hurt me because I love you. When one of you little assholes goes out, I want to come and find you and beat you within an inch of your life. I am not kidding. But I'm often required to sit back and wait for you to show up again. Sometimes I can chase you. Generally, I can't. But if I'm chasing you, stop soon, because I get pissed when I have to run. Don't make me chase you, because I guarantee you, I'm going to be watching you. Thank you for loving me.